Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie.
I'm Sonia.
Katie.
I'm George.
Hi, everybody. today we have another special episode. The past few weeks we've had some guest stars in light of Sonia's absence. Sonia, you've been in Colombia the past few weeks, but you're back. Back stateside.
That's right. Hello.
If you were to compare Colombia to one location in the X-Men universe, what would it be?
Not Muir Island, probably. Maybe Genosha.
Or the Savage Land.
Maybe.
Okay. Right. We haven't gotten there yet, so maybe I shouldn't mention the Savage Land. But welcome back, Sonia. And welcome, Katie and George.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for coming. So, Katie and George, before we dive into this episode, The Cure, episode 9, I'm just wondering if you want to say anything about this cartoon and why you're here, and if we're all wasting our time. Not because you're here, but
it's a loaded question.
Because X-Men is a worthy thing to podcast about, I think. Just the theme song alone. Brings
yes.
up so many, so much nostalgia.
Yeah, and I remember when the first pilot hit, and everyone was obsessed with it, and then a year or two went by before the thing happened.
I remember there was that huge gap, so I mean, when it came back, it was like a huge thing.
But I remember thinking, too, that like, not then so much, but on reflection now and today I was thinking about it, that the X-Men from my young age seemed like the first thing that I was like, this is a really good show.
And that's so funny because I remember when I would watch it, I'd be like, this seems a little too adult for me.
Yeah.
I was just like, this is too much.
Well, it's like you said about the theme song, it's like serious as shit. Like, the X-Men are getting down to business.
I felt like it was a chore. Like, I was like, oh, no. Like, it felt, like, worse than homework. Like, oh, it's going to make me, like, face adult stuff. Like, loyalty and family and morals.
Yeah, it is just like a lot of, like, after-school lessons with a beautiful, like, superhero package.
Yeah,
but it's super moralistic. The show. Yeah.
Well, I can't recall many other shows, but I feel like most shows targeted to that age group were very heavy-handed, and this one was sort of like complex.
Yeah,
Seeped in like a cool character, like a lot of cool characters.
Yeah.
I remember feeling like so loyal to Spider-Man. Mm. Like that was my
Spider-Man.
I know that you're joking about it too much in my head. Spider-Man.
We call him Spider-Man in this house.
Spider-Man. It was like
Spider-Man.
I couldn't like one thing or the other, so it was like, I don't know, Spider-Man is, that's my show, but like, of course it'd be.
Well, the joke was on you because Spider-Man and the X-Men share a universe, the Marvel universe.
Was there a crossover?
Oh, there was a crossover. Oh. A multi-episode crossover.
I remember that.
Yes.
And which one?
In Spider-Man. Mm. So Spider-Man, the X-Men show up in Spider-Man, and Spider-Man makes a very fleeting guest appearance in X-Men, but not with no lines. Just
if anything,
sort of like
they
off-camera.
Kind of almost make fun of, no, not make fun of him, but they didn't give Spider-Man the due justice. I remember that because I remember feeling like my team was losing. Like I was never into sports, but the one sport I experienced in life was like
was
Spider-Man.
It,
not that there was ever reverses, but just like I wanted them to succeed as shows.
Did it have to do with him being in the papers?
Wait, why Spider-Man's
like X-Men
Spider-Man
made a small cameo in an X-Men by being in the newspapers.
No. So all right, I'll set the record straight as the resident nerd here. Spider-Man, he appears in X-Men, the X-Men show, very briefly. He like shoots his spider web and saves somebody when there's like a massive worldwide catastrophe going on. But he's not really shown on screen. It's off screen, but it's cool. And in that same scene, I think they show other Marvel superheroes of note. I can't remember all of them right now, but so it's very, very like blinking, you missed it.
It's like a super group cameo episode.
Yes. And, I think it's in the Phoenix Saga, but anyway, but the X-Men, when they're on Spider-Man, it's a big deal. Spider-Man goes to the X-Mansion, he meets them all, he gets into a fight with Wolverine, there's a huge misunderstanding.
How could you not?
Yeah.
Guy's a jerk in the show.
Yeah, I mean, Spider-Man, it's cool because a cool thing about Spider-Man is, like, he in the comics, the original 60s comics, is he never gets along with any of the other Marvel heroes, at least for the first, like, 10 years or whatever. And they really capture that in the show, too. Like, he kind of hates the X-Men right away. So that's actually a really, that's a cool thing there. But anyway, what were we talking
about? The episode collage. Oh, wait.
So this is The Cure.
The Cure!
Okay, so this is, this is like the... to this point, this has to be the most emotionally heavy-hitting episode we have thus far. It's mainly a Rogue-themed episode, and we've got, like, Rogue, like, crying, and Rogue, like, just being really... She's reflecting on her past, which is really tragic, and her whole place in the X-Men world and the world at large. It's, like, it's very, like, sad, like, character study of Rogue, which is very cool. That was, like, my first impression.
She's doing a lot of soul-searching in this episode.
Yeah.
And a lot of, like, someone saying something and her being like, oh.
Right, yeah. And further emphasize, like, I haven't, like, fully... I noticed it in the last episode we met Colossus, who's a guest star. But when we meet Colossus, he's got his own, like, Russian-themed music, because he's from Russia. Excuse me. And Rogue's got, like, her own, like, musical score that I think is introduced in this episode, and it will come back in later episodes, too. And I think that happens with a lot of the characters. I'm just, like, putting this together right now as I'm saying it out loud, that a lot of the characters slowly get their own musical cues, and I think that's a nice little touch, too. Like, and, like, as you watch the show going forward, your brain really gets triggered when you hear, like, oh, no, this is, like, you know, Storm's, like, emotional moment times.
And so, you know they're doing it well because I can't even recall it. But I'm sure if I heard it, I'd be like, is Rogue right behind me?
Well, you were just, I'm sure you were just, like, swept away in the moment, like Sonya, you were mentioning, where Rogue was, like, watching Cyclops and Jean hold hands. And she's, like, really sad. And then there's other moments like that, too, where she's just, like, reflecting deeply. And that's when the music kicks in, and it's pretty sad. But this episode doesn't open with Rogue. It opens with another sort of guest star, famous X-Man who's not in the show, only as a guest star, and that's Angel, who is, the character's name is Warren Worthington III, and he's, like, his backstory is, like, he's this billionaire, like, playboy type, and in the comic books, he's, like, pretty happy-go-lucky, and he's not, like, as brooding and as sad, but in this show, they establish him as, like, really, like, upset and sad that he's a mutant. So, the show starts with he's with his girlfriend in his, like, French chalet, let's say.
Let's call it a chalet, just to throw it out there. I don't know what else to call it, so let's just go to
chalet.
It
is a chalet.
What was the line that he said? You stepped on the wrong chalet.
Terrorizing the wrong chalet.
Yeah, that's, like, something a real, like, you know, angry billionaire might say in his life.
Get rid of these wings.
If I heard that, I'd be like, is this really a chalet?
What makes it a chalet versus sort of, like, a countryside estate? I don't know.
Yeah, or condo.
The Alps.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's just, like,
the
sort
Alps
of, like...
make it a chalet.
Oh, really? Oh,
I think
okay.
So.
But what if it's on the Swiss side?
We're learning about the world.
No, just a big Swiss
all
house.
All false information there is.
So, you know, so Angel's girlfriend is complaining to him that he's not, like, opening up enough, and he's really, like, distant. And my first thought about his girlfriend was that I'm pretty sure this is the backstory of Melania Trump. Does anyone want to comment?
Definitely.
She's, like, this Eastern European.
It's just not enough.
Like, especially she has a thing for, like, playboy billionaires.
Right, blonde billionaires.
Don't want to be mutants.
Right, and that are, like, emotionally closed off and have terrible secrets.
Way too much responsibility, way too much power.
I'll just stay in New York. Thank you very much.
So let's just say she's Melania Trump for the purposes of this show. I think
I don't know what
does
her
she
name,
get a name
is.
Yeah.
No, she doesn't have a name. No.
So it's definitely Melania Trump.
She's just got, like, a thick, like, Eastern European
it
accent.
Looks
maybe it's French.
Like, strikingly like her. Like,
yeah.
The animator really was
like her facial features, like.
Well, that's because she's sort of been sculpted by the gods.
Right. And Angel would, you know, Angel himself is, like, his character is, like, angelic, and he's, like, so he would date
except
no one no
like
less than
him. Except he's, like, super bitter, which, like, I remember even as a kid being, like, that's not right. Like,
yeah.
He's rich, he's, like, this tall, handsome
His power's
man.
Not even that
And
freakish.
He's also, like, come sit next to me by the fire.
Right.
And he has wings! I mean, is that not great?
I know. He's like, oh, I'm ostracized from society. I'm like, for your beauty.
And it's, like, you hide your wings pretty well, too. It doesn't seem like you're, you know, you could keep it a secret.
Right.
And also
you
was
can
thinking
go to Starbucks.
Like, he keeps his wings hidden pretty well, and a giant gun.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
What else is he packing?
Yeah, so...
I had to say it. You set it up.
And so, I mean, so what happens is he's, you know, bitterly enjoying his French chalet, and and Cable, our time-traveling friend from the previous episode, Slave Island, shows up. And it's a very complicated plot in this episode. He's after this guy named Dr. Adler, who designed the mutant collars that were seen in Slave Island. That what the mutant collars do is when a mutant wears them, their powers are deactivated. And also, if they try to take them off, they explode and blow up their heads. So Cable's after that guy. He thinks Angel knows where he is because Angel is funding Adler. Because Angel wants Adler to find a cure for being a mutant. So Cable's tracked Angel down in the Alps or wherever, and they get into a big fight. They shoot each other. I think, like, Cable throws, like, a grenade at him or something.
The flash.
A flash grenade, yeah.
Yeah, because she's all blinded, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, so that sets up that whole scene. So the girlfriend, Melania Trump, gets blinded by the flash grenade, picks up Angel's weapon, and accidentally shoots Angel in the chest.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not even that bad. He's fine. He flies off into the sunset. But it's like he's like completely scarred.
That's his, like, goodbye forever.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's kind of sad.
He's like, enough is enough.
And she clearly is like, doesn't care that he's a mutant, you know? No. She's like into him, you know?
Yeah, obviously.
She's like, I didn't mean to. So that's
I don't know. She expressed a little more emotion than Ro, but anyway.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. She's, like, pretty emotional.
Outwardly.
Yeah. She's all about emotion. Like, she
pulls it in.
Yeah. She, like, wants to get close to him, mm-hmm. and he pulls away, and then she accidentally shoots him. Like, that's a pretty dramatic day for her.
Oh, yeah.
So, but that's a pretty, you know, like weird kind of, like, adult-themed kind of opening in a way. You know, like, two adults enjoying a romantic fire and discussion about, like secret identities and just kind of, mm-hmm. like, weird, like, militant men fighting. I don't know.
I always liked how she's like, don't you have a mad scientist here? And he doesn't say yes or no. He's just like, his name is this.
Yeah, he's, like, really concerned about Adler's reputation. All right. And then it's at that point that the action shifts to Scotland, a fictional place called Muir Island. I think it's fictional. I don't think it's a real island off Scotland.
I guess we'll never know.
I'm never looking it up.
There's no way to find out.
And we see Professor X, who is safe. In, if you were following along with us in the last episode, Juggernaut destroys the mansion, and the X-Men thinks that Professor X might be dead, although they discover that he made it out. He left a cryptic message that didn't tell the X-Men where the hell he was. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm away now. Do not bother me. Yeah. But it turns out he's in Scotland with, Moira McTaggart, who is his ex-girlfriend.
We don't know that yet.
We don't know that yet, yeah, but...
Yeah. We're all about the spoilers,
now it explains the tension when they were outside the door.
Yes, yeah. There is tension.
There is.
Yeah. And so...
There is, guys.
Definitely.
I sensed it.
Yeah. But I think it's like at this point where Professor X, while he likes Moira as a friend, he kind of like looks down on her. Because they're talking about Adler too, because Adler is doing the research at Moira's lab. And Professor X is like, he's trying to kill mutants. I don't think that's a good idea. And Moira's like, I don't know. I mean, a lot of mutants might want it. He's like, how dare you? It's like, yeah. He says, like, a really, like, bizarre line, something like, being a mutant is no different than being a traditional Homo sapien. Which,
yeah, it almost seemed like insulting to his own kind in a way.
Yeah,
like,
but I want to ask you guys, like, do you guys feel like traditional Homo sapiens, like in your everyday life?
I know. I try and wake up every morning traditional Homo sapien, very traditional
cereal, you know.
Yeah, it's like I just want to know the characteristics of what makes a traditional Homo sapien, you know, just
the words Homo sapien probably only pass through my mind like
every time you watch X-Men. Yeah, so I mean, yeah, I consider myself a traditional Homo sapien, just for the record. I
actually
put that out there.
Often like to say that I think I'm a Neanderthal. I mean, George can attest to that. I like, do you think my forehead, like, I think that's the shape of my skull.
But she says it in pride.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, there's nothing, I mean, I think they've, I read somewhere, that they said that there's more Neanderthal in us than they had realized.
Than expected.
Genetically, yeah. So that's something.
I just really like to imagine inside my Neanderthal grandma's getting pounded by those Homo sapiens.
Oh my god.
So basically.
But aren't Neanderthals really good long distance runners?
Oh.
You know, that's...
I think they are. They'd run for, like, days.
Wow.
Atanarjawat.
I don't know. Is that a real word?
What is that?
It's a documentary about a fast runner. It's called Atanarjawat, the Fast Runner.
Cool.
Anyway, runs fast.
Spoiler.
Speaking of spoilers.
Is he Mexican?
No, he's Native American. He might be Native, like...
Mexican?
Peruvian
or something?
No, I mean,
like, on the Europe side, like...
On the Native American on the Europe
side? Not Native American, so it'd be, like, the Native people of, like...
Denmark?
Denmark. I don't know. No.
There's
definitely...
no way to find out, once again.
We'll
never know this, too.
She saw it once, it's gone.
Because no one's going to be able to spell
Alaska.
That based on this podcast. But, it's funny you bring up Neanderthals, because that's actually a huge theme in the X-Men universe, too, is that, the big fear that the humans have, and this is established in the comic books. Actually, I think in it's either in Grant Morrison's comics or Joss Whedon's, or they both pick up on it, is that the fear the humans have is that humankind genocided the Neanderthals. Because that's what they say, like, oh, the dominant species comes and they wipe out the lesser species. And that's the fear driving the humans in the present day, is that now they're the Neanderthals, but they want to take, like, preemptive caution and kill all the mutants because they're the next level.
Well, the mutants are not ordinary Homo sapiens, then. He was...
Well, that's what he's saying. Right?
He's saying they are ordinary,
he's talking about,
but he's
something
like...
else.
but not really. He's like, we're just ordinary and gonna totally wipe you out.
Did he say traditional, though?
He said traditional.
And he said we are like traditional?
Yeah, he's trying to make it all about equality. So
he's like, we're not going... Because he's on the not wipe you out side.
The thing that scares me about the mutants is, like, they're not, like, the same amongst themselves.
Right,
so, like,
right.
Don't you think, like, one would just be born with, like, the ability to just blow up the Earth?
Well, that there are mutants that have that power.
They gotta wipe them out. It's too dangerous.
I'm actually, at this point in the show, I talk about this every once in a while, I'm leaning towards being anti-mutant.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're pretty too insanely dangerous.
Wow.
Yeah, they're really, really dangerous.
Just to jump ahead, go ahead. But Rogue, you know, discovering that her, you know, wanting to get rid of her powers because it makes her lonely. Like, she has such a human cost to her powers.
Mm-hmm.
And yet she realized, like, she wasn't saying, like, great powers, great responsibility or anything like that. Just, like, I am my powers and my powers am me. And I think it's dehumanizing, traditional Homo sapienizing to not allow them to have their powers. Like, I don't know. I have to be on the pro mutant side on this pretty hard, because I think we all have tremendous corrupt powers, but I think that, like, it's important for us to have that individuality.
No, that's a beautiful point. You're actually swinging me back the other way.
You have to express it, you know, and, like, there's always a cost to being.
I'm a real swing voter.
I think from an individual basis, you're right, but, like, from controlling society,
I don't want to control society. I want to have freedom to reign.
Well, it's not about Rogue. It's about mutants.
Give us liberty, or give me death, or give me mutants, or give me an explosion.
Mm-hmm. But then one of them's gonna be born, and they're just gonna be like, "If I open my eyes, the sun explodes."
That's basically Dr.
That, so
Xavier, right?
Yeah. It'll just happen. It'll be over.
Done.
Yeah.
So don't worry.
Oh right, yeah, because they would have to get that far.
What did Ayn Rand say? The world didn't end, or no, I didn't.
The world
end.
Is in your head.
Yeah, I didn't end. The world ended, or I'm going to die. So
the world doesn't end.
So actually, everyone continues.
When you
on.
End the world,
if anything,
ends.
It would be the greatest justice to humanity.
We're huge Ayn Rand fans.
Oh my god! This is turning into one of my favorite episodes. let's cut back to Westchester, New York. The X-Men are still rebuilding the mansion after Juggernaut leveled it. Colossus was helping out in the last episode, but I guess he left before they could finish. And we see Wolverine. He's like a real busybody. He's just like going from station to station, bossing
like
people around.
He's one of those jerk toddlers. I'm going to say, rewatching it now is probably... That's the biggest surprise of the whole show, is how much of a jerk Wolverine is. Because even back then, I'm like, he's totally the coolest one.
Yeah.
I think. Oh, I don't really remember.
I was a big Gambit fan.
Yeah, I think I was too, actually.
I was never really on Team Wolverine. Oh, no, me neither. Like,
I loved the Beast. I don't think the same hairdo. Yeah. And I was like, stop trying to copy the Beast.
You just like the Beast.
Yeah, they had similar haircuts, actually, Beast and Wolverine. I never picked that out.
that flayed out, like,
I don't know what that is.
Rocks it, and the Wolverine looks like a tool.
Well, no. I always thought it was funny because Wolverine's, like, costume, like, allowed his hair to be like that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he put the...
You know what? I gotta defend Wolverine here.
Okay, sorry. I know. We got a lot of Wolverine fans out there.
I'm actually... I love Wolverine based on this show. Speaking of which, we can't bash Wolverine. Cal Dodd, the voice of Wolverine, is now following us on Twitter.
Oh, so. And I love the Wolverine. You know what I like about Wolverine the most?
That guy's fucking awesome.
I think the voice work is excellent.
Yeah, the acting is amazing.
I think the written work for the character is also great.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I think the character's true characteristics... Are that of a very annoying toddler.
No, he's enjoying himself right now. He's like really like he's excited to see Jean put the nails in with her mind to build the wall and Storm mix the mortar around.
I feel like he's dumbfounded.
Not read like enjoyment whatsoever.
Well, only when Gambit questions him, that's when it's not enjoyment. Gambit's like big expert, always giving orders.
Yeah,
and then making up for your mistakes.
The way I read that was like he like ran over to Jean and was like, "You're doing it wrong."
No,
and then she's like, "Watch this," and he's like, "What?"
Yeah, yeah, and he had like a smile on his face. I think he likes to see her powers in action.
I would say like what I do love about Wolverine is that he's not ashamed to just like put it all out there, what he's feeling, what he's experiencing at all times, and that you know can come across annoying when you're trying to build a house.
It's because he's like he's very like emotionally like he's like his emotional wound.
Extremely insecure. That's what I felt like.
He's had a traumatic life.
Wouldn't you be?
Hey, he's really, you know, it's, he had a traumatic life in every version of Wolverine I've ever seen.
But in this episode,
and other bits.
Well, and I just got to point out, this is another instance of white-on-white racism on Wolverine's part, because he really gets into Gambit's, like, ethnicity, but his culture or whatever. Like, he calls him Gumbo, calls him Cajun, and, like, really derisively, too, which is kind of like, if he was anything else, it would, like, probably be way more offensive. Like, I wonder if people who are Cajun, like, would be offended, like, with Wolverine's antics of picking on Gambit in that
way. I know I am, clearly.
Are you? Wait, are you Cajun or are you offended? Which
one? I guess neither.
Neither, okay. I mean, they have a really funny fight, Wolverine and Gambit there. They almost kill each other again. Like, Wolverine pops his claws. And
he hides behind those claws.
Yeah.
There's the scanning through the other episodes. The episode he like goes to a bar and he drinks, and like the second there's a fight, he's like, "Fight these!"
Swing.
Yeah. He can't help himself. He just
like if he didn't have those claws, he'd be nothing.
Yeah. Well, no, that's not true.
That's the vibe. That's what he's projecting.
No. Okay. No, he'd still be...
He's been a mutant a long time before he had the claws.
Right.
Well, he always had the bone claws, but...
He's just
this kid with a gun, you know? He's just like... The term trigger-happy versus gun-happy. You know, he's like very gun-happy.
It reminds me of that character in Stripes that's like, real, like, when do I get my gun kind of thing. And when he has the gun, he's just always like putting in people's... You're right. It's kind of something like that.
Gun-happy.
Yeah. But he's got a big heart, though.
He's got the biggest heart.
Right. And then,
he does.
Right after Rogue.
Right. Okay, so that's where transition to the next scene.
I love their friendship.
How would you like that?
Whose friendship?
The Rogue and Wolverine's.
Really?
I feel like he's... Because he was like, "Hey, kiddo." Like, I don't know, he throws her...
Are you, like, talking more about, like, the movie? Like, their friendship?
No, that's fine.
I think he's completely different in the movie.
Well, in the movie, it's like a mentor like situation because she's young and he's like.
But they do seem similar to me, like I guess in their emotional rawness. No?
Yes, they're both damaged. I mean, that's like a great thing about the show. They're all emotionally damaged in one way or another.
They're both like chronically down the line, too.
Yes, I think that's you're right.
Maybe that's what I mean. Like,
yeah,
there is a bond that you sense, and maybe that's why the movie kind of put that together is because
they've got unrequited love. Wolverine and Rogue, well, different unrequited loves.
I didn't pick up on any of that. This episode?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Or just, like, in their character.
Well, even in this episode, because
Wolverine pines after Jean, who he can never have, because she's with Cyclops. And, well, I don't know if Rogue pines after Gambit, but she's...
I don't think she pines after some person in particular. I think she's just got this, like, general void.
Right, because she wants love. Yeah. She wants to experience love and, like, affection and, like, closeness, and she can't because of her power.
Just one night.
And and then, I mean, in this scene, so Professor X tells the X-Men via, like, Wizard of Oz VidCam that, you know, there's a cure for mutants out there. I'll keep you informed. And Wolverine, like right away speaks for the whole group. He's like, we don't want no cure. We love being mutants. Nobody from this group's gonna defect. And Rogue's like crying immediately. Yeah. Like she sees Cyclops and
I loved that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, their relationship.
I don't see it.
Okay, go on.
All right, yeah.
Who else? You know, what is his last line?
He just keeps, like, yeah, digging it in.
He's like, why would anyone want that?
Yeah. It couldn't possibly make you any lonelier than...
Really she not. Can screw nails into the wall without using her hands.
She just screws and screws.
He's like, I can never get hurt. I live forever. It's great.
Does anyone else want ice cream?
Yeah, so, I mean, and then there's a scene where... I love the scene where we, like, cut to the, like, the X-Men barn, and Cyclops and Jean are in their spandex, like spooning each other. And
I love this.
Oh, yeah.
And Jean's the only one that picked up that Rogue was sad that over her powers.
Right. She's like, I sensed it with my powers. It's like, or he just looked at her face.
Yeah. Right after she stormed out of the room.
Just used logic that her powers must
loudly
suck.
Loudly weeping.
Yeah. Bought that tourist guide to Muir Island.
So Rogue hops in her, like, red convertible and decides to drive to Muir Island. Drive to the airport, I guess.
No, she flew.
Well, oh no, but first she drives. She gets in her car, and then Gambit leaps over the, like, 20-foot high cement wall over the mansion in, like, one, like, amazing athletic swoop and lands in her driving convertible.
Just to harass her
just
time.
To hit on her.
Yeah.
And so my question to the group here is, do you think Gambit is being cruel by continually hitting on Rogue? Or is he being genuine?
Is he, like, teasing, or is he...
Or is he, like... I mean, like, because Rogue's, like, hot, and Gambit's hot. They're both, like... Yeah. You know, they're both from the South.
Could be a good match.
They're, like, a perfect match.
If only Rogue could touch his skin.
Yeah.
I think he's being genuine.
You think... Yeah. You don't think he's harassing her in a way that's, like, cruel? Like, making fun of her, like...
He's harassing her in a cruel way, but it's not that he's not genuine about his affection for her.
I think basically he would kiss her. I think that's the
idea. Oh, he wants to. And, he would even if he gets electrocuted.
Yeah, right,
like,
yeah.
He's like, give me some of that,
it's,
you know?
Yeah, he's like, it's worth it. Yeah. Maybe it's worth the risk, no?
He's like, I kind of like the hospital.
Yeah. So, you know, she throws Gambit out of her convertible. She's really disgusted with him. Then she, like, sits on an airplane's wing that's flying to Scotland.
Can we just talk for a second about how she gets there?
Yeah.
You notice when she flies, she, like, has to put one fist up in the air
go? She's like Superman or Supergirl.
Why does that have to happen?
Because she's aiming herself.
Stick her head up in the... Okay.
I mean, that's like...
She's very vulnerable.
That's something that I think... I'm probably wrong about this, but I think Christopher Reeve invented that when he portrayed Superman.
Mm-hmm.
That he put, like, a fist in front of him to pivot on the axis of his body. And that's, like, a weird acting choice.
Hmm.
Although, that was probably drawn in the comics, too. Superman probably was shown flying that way. Anyway, but that's,
My answer. Anyway, that's how she gets to the airplane.
Well, if you can hit a bird before it hitting your face.
Oh, yeah. She's just punching birds.
Yeah. It gives you the opportunity to punch a bird.
Right. all right. On to page 2 here.
Okay, so she's sitting on the airplane wing.
Yeah, she's flying to Scotland. That's how she gets there. It's kind of clever. Because she's seeking Adler. She wants the cure. And then we're in Scotland, and we're at this bar populated by a lot of crazy mutants.
I love that.
Yeah, I love it too. We meet Pyro and Avalanche, like two like doofy like B-level villains. Pyro is wearing like this bright yellow and red spandex outfit, and he controls fire. And Avalanche is wearing this like silver football outfit, and he like shoots like... earthquake beams out of his hands.
Do you know, like, Pyro? He's got, like, those hoses attached or something? What is that?
So, Pyro, he has, like, a tank of gasoline on his back, because he can't create fire, he can only control it.
Okay.
So he shoots fire out of, like, his hand nozzles.
It's a flame torch, or a... Is that right? Flame torch?
No. It just seems to me that, like...
Flamethrower.
Yeah, flamethrower, yes.
Seems like you wouldn't need a superpower, right? Seems like you could just have that.
Right. But he controls the fire.
Yeah, he turns into like birds and tigers and stuff. Like he controls.
He makes designs out of it.
He's a fire artist.
Yeah.
Okay, he didn't start.
But in that episode, like whenever he did it, just the fire went straight as it seems like it would.
Yeah.
But I guess that power is he could do more.
Right.
He can get real specific.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, in the movie,
he could turn corners,
and he doesn't get burned by it.
I think he's kind of like he's probably a little invulnerable to fire.
Oh, yeah, he's in the movies.
Well, in the movie, he's like a punk kid from America, not like a limey British man, which is way funnier, in my opinion.
Is that Fantastic Four?
You're thinking of the Human Torch, who's different. He turns into fire
and
can shoot fire.
That's different.
Right, this guy just controls it. So, you know, they're in this bar, too. They meet Rogue. They start hitting on her, too. So she's, like, kind of sexually harassed wherever she goes, which is, I like that about the show, because she's drawn so, like, beautifully. Mm-hmm. And the show acknowledges it, that she's, like, hot to trot. Like, not, you know, it's not like...
So hot.
She's so hot. and I know, I like that. I mean, because it's like a touch of realism in a way, you know. Like, it's unrealistic how beautiful she is, and sort of, but... I mean, not really, but it's realistic the way people respond to her.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's also realistic the way she responds to other people, because they're trying to, like... talk to her, basically.
Yeah, they're hitting
like,
on her.
You know, like, they're harassing her a little bit, and she just, like... barely has to move. She, like, sticks out an arm and just, like, flings the guy, like, through the wall.
She throws Pyro through a concrete wall and then Avalanche, like, through the concrete wall into the ocean, and which essentially is attempted murder in my... she doesn't know this guy's gonna survive, like, a...
But to her, it's like swatting flies. She's like, it's not even a big deal. Just...
Yeah, I mean, but she's, like, really kind of emotionally unhinged in this episode. She's just not letting anything get in her way or anybody.
It's funny she's sort of, like, aware that, like, these people might not be mutants and they might have families.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. She almost murders these guys and she thinks nothing of it. So, I mean, that's kind of... But, okay, whatever. I mean, she probably knows they're going to be okay.
Well, they deserved it.
They did. They're very bad. I mean, she has a sense that they're evil.
They are bad guys.
If you're ever going to harass a woman, you deserve it.
And then...
Sorry.
No, it's okay. And then Rogue bashes into Adler's lab. He tells her to go away, but she just knocks down this, like, 6 feet, like, thick, deep steel door, because she's super strong. And
that seemed a little bit even stranger to me than the destroying of the two men at the bar. Like...
Yeah. Why?
She could have knocked a little bit more.
Yeah, I know.
She was like, this is like the guy she wants a favor from.
Yeah, come back tomorrow.
She's just like, slam door! Give me what I want now!
Yeah, I know. Yeah, she's just like really like...
I flew all the way here very easily.
She's obsessed. She is just... Well, she's at a desperate breaking point. Like, this is why I like this episode.
Pretty dramatic.
Yeah, and... But, you know... Adler is hiding, so Rogue flies away. But turns out Adler, dun-dun-dun, is Mystique in disguise. Mystique, who we know can change into different, like, people. And Mystique, we learn, is the slave of Apocalypse in this show. And this is Apocalypse's amazing introduction. Now, Apocalypse is, like, this, like, 10-foot-tall, like, half-robot, half-purple mutant man. Who is...
He's got, like, a clown face.
Right, he's, like...
Yeah, his clown face.
He's like, 5,000 years old, and he speaks in, like, cryptic, like...
But we don't know all that about him yet.
Well, his first...
There's so much I want to know about him, by the way.
Okay. I know a lot about him if you want to know.
Oh, man. Well, but when it ended, and he's like... What was his line?
He says... He says something...
The very end?
Yeah, is it too early for that?
Well, let's get to his... But his first opening line is, he says, like all people, she's a fool, but will use the machine to turn her into my slave, referring to Rogue. And, you know...
Which is funny, because he's lumping the mutants in with the traditional
Homo sapiens. Yeah, he's a more evolved, right, yeah.
And also using, like, very power tactics, like using machines, guys.
Yeah.
Control the population.
Maybe he's the singularity.
I think he is the embodiment of the singularity. Yeah. Oh, totally.
I mean, he thinks he's God. That's the backstory, is that he's from ancient Egypt. He's been alive for thousands of years. He's kept alive by, like, magical technology and mutant powers.
Fascinating.
And he, like, the backstory is that, like, a lot of human history, like, mythology and religion is based off him in the X universe.
Oh, okay.
Like, that's where the whole Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse comes from, is from him.
Oh.
And that's why he wants Rogue. He wants to create a new Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. So, he's, like, super, like, cryptic and ancient and, like, full of mystery and stuff.
And I was in my storage space today.
Yeah.
And I came across this, which isn't him, but I thought it was.
No, that's Darkseid.
It's dark. I thought it was Dr. Doom.
George's is pulled in.
No.
McDonald's.
Yeah, he just
I think
George
it
just
McDonald's.
Pulled George.
It's a McDonald's toy from back in the day.
That's hilarious. So.
But it's like one of three or four action figures I have left.
So that's Darkseid from the DC universe, who's actually extremely
wrong
similar.
Wrong universe, George.
I know, but pretty similar. Right?
Well, yeah.
The Batman podcast. Get out of here.
Darkseid. There's like.
I feel like this is pretty good.
That's good.
I really thought it was him.
I pulled it out at such an opportune moment, and here.
Yeah. Providentially.
I'll put it back in my pocket.
Yeah, put that in your pocket. Like Darkseid actually. I think, like, Thanos is a character in the Marvel Universe. Like, one of them is ripping off the other. So, in that era in the 70s, all these characters were ripped off from each other, and there's, like, duplicates. And Apocalypse is in that mold as well. Like, in that time, they had no problem liberally just having, like... You know, in the DC Universe, there's, like, the Superman character. In the Marvel Universe, there's, like, the Superman equivalent, you know, etc. Mm-hmm. It's, like, there's always, like, mirrors. So, that's...
Like Sergeant Pepper's.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, the Beatles and Sergeant, you know, that band, Sergeant Pepper, that was...
It was ripping them off.
Yeah. all right,
one
so
and
we...
only Lonely Heart Club.
We meet Mystique, we meet Apocalypse, and again, I think I mentioned it in a previous podcast, but I love Mystique's yellowed skull belt. Belt of skulls.
I was just thinking that I never noticed that.
Yeah.
Or I don't remember it.
Do you think they're monkey skulls?
That's just evil. That's, like, so gross.
They're tiny.
Or shrunken heads.
But did you notice she also has one, like, right at
the
widow's peak.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, on her forehead also.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a more wicked Mystique than the movie Mystique, in my opinion.
But
yeah, imagine seeing that in real life.
That's terrifying.
Well, I mean, if those are, like, the skulls that she's captured of the people that she emulates...
Or are they part of her body, because...
Well, they are if she turns into
changes.
Them. But she also killed them to get that way. You know what I mean?
I don't.
So when she's not wearing the literal skin of the person, mm-hmm. her belt is showing their little skull. Their little skull, too.
I think it's just a fashion choice. I don't think.
That's well, no, but is she wearing clothes or is it her?
So she's wearing. Well, okay. So all right, she's wearing a white dress,
right?
And a headdress
really
with
cool
a yellow
belt.
Skull too.
Really cool.
Designed by Alexander McQueen.
Right. No, it's just her outfit.
Collector item.
But I mean, like, she changes. Mm-hmm. She doesn't change into a cop and, like, still wears the dress.
My theory is this, that she 3D prints clothing as she transforms into different characters. It's like, so
like
it's...
Spider-Man's web in the movie, not the show, where it's a cartridge. Anyway.
I think in the show it's a cartridge, too.
In the show it's a cartridge. In one of the movies it's part of him, in the other movie it's a cartridge, so...
I like the cartridge.
I like the cartridge, too.
Yeah, it's more realistic.
Yeah, definitely. The cartridge is way better. But Mystique...
Anyway, back to Spider-Man.
Yeah,
sorry, I'll always try.
Back to Darkseid. I just wanted to mention her belt of skulls. I find that ridiculously
I'm so glad that
terrifying.
You brought it up, because I couldn't stop thinking about it. For, like... It, like, distracted me from the big, like, climactic battle.
Yeah.
In the end, I was just like, but that skull belt, though.
Yeah, is that holding up her pants?
What? Where can I get one? No.
Yeah, I want one of those, too. This episode's a little bit confusing plot-wise, because everyone's talking about this Dr. Adler guy, Pyro and Avalanche get it into their heads, like, let's kidnap this guy, because everyone wants him. Mm-hmm. So they kidnap him, not knowing it's Mystique, who they're there to work for. They've come to Muir Island to work for Mystique, so that's ridiculous. They get into a fight with Cable along the way. Cable, like, shoots them into the ocean.
Cable's speeches, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. No one else really gave... Granted, I haven't seen the show, I think, in, like, 20...
That's fine.
What? More! 25! Anyway.
Yes. We're aging.
No one else, like, gave them a speech about who he was. Like, does he always do that? He's like, I'm Cable, and I have... There's so many things about me.
Well, he's... Okay, so...
I'm so complex.
Yes. No.
He gave a speech about his character.
Well, that's what's cool about him. Because, like, he appeared in an earlier episode, but he's very mysterious at this point. We do not know where he's from or what his deal is. They mention a backstory in the first episode, but it's very quickly proven that that's, like, all a lie, or it was, like, something is not... accurate about his backstory. So up to this point, Cable is a mystery. So okay. we can just leave it at that. He's just a man of mystery at this okay. point. So
good voice actor, I think.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Very badass. Yeah.
And very sexily drawn cartoon.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Well, I mean,
I'm
everyone,
a cable
in the,
guy,
everyone, everyone in the show is like ridiculously good looking. I mean, this well, is like the show of like beautiful people, mutants, right?
Mm-hmm.
Except for the Morlocks, which is we talked about. Like
right. Wolverine's a bit of a toddler.
You need to like.
Well, that's not to do with his looks. No. Wolverine's, he's rugged looking. He's not bad looking.
Yeah, he's got some nice chest
hair. He's also like 5'2".
Well, okay, but you know.
He doesn't look 5'2" in the...
Hey, you know what?
He is, like, though.
In the cartoon, he does, I think.
Really?
I don't know
I think
if
he looks about the same height as the other characters.
No, he's definitely
no,
shorter.
No, way shorter.
But he's got enough personality to make up for it.
Yeah, he's, he's in a big Napoleon complex. There's a funny moment where Cable throws a plasma grenade at Rogue, who's trying to rescue Dr. Adler, who doesn't realize it's Mystique, and he spits, like, the grenade pin at, on yeah. Mystique's head.
Yeah. It's like, ping, yeah. but Mystique as Dr. Adler.
Yeah, yeah. and it's like, plasma grenade.
I love that! He
Maybe one of the funniest
everything.
Things I've witnessed in person.
That's just really badass when you're in a war, you just, like, you throw a grenade and kill somebody and spit the
For
grenade
no
pin
reason.
At your, like,
on,
neighbor.
On a scientist-looking man.
I'm a scientist.
Yeah.
Wait, he's... Okay, so back up. He is yeah. looking for Dr. Adler.
Yes, because he... Okay, Cable's mission is that he wants to kill Adler because Adler designed the collars that suppress mutant powers. Mm-hmm. So he's like, you're a dangerous man. Too dangerous to live. So
like Miles
yeah.
Dyson.
He's about to kill.
Yeah, he's on your side of the fence of things.
Yeah, that's right.
Too
the anti-mutant.
Too dangerous to live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I right. would say just put him
anti-
in prison,
anti-mutant.
You know? Reform. Mm.
Wait.
But he's not anti-mutant. He's just anti-Adler, right?
No, Cable's anti-mutant.
No,
yeah.
Cable
yeah.
is a mutant.
Mutant.
Cable's a mutant.
Cable's a
Cable's
mutant.
A good guy.
Cable, is the, Cable is the son of Cyclops and Jean that they had to send to the future and has returned to the past because...
you told us!
From like an alternate timeline.
We were alert.
This doesn't come up in the show. So it's not real,
no
it's not a real spoiler. It's like a comic thing.
I think it makes it better knowing this.
Yeah. It does. Oh, he is Jean's son.
They briefly allude to it
so
in the show in like a very like super fast like wink to the fans, but you have to be like a real in the deep like comic fan to know that.
Or so, listen to this podcast.
Right. Well, not according to everybody. I got a really like I wouldn't call it nasty, but like a really critical comment from our first episode. Someone like got on me for saying, because I said that Stan Lee created the X-Men, which, listen, Stan Lee created the X-Men. The guy, I think he like was upset because I didn't give credit to Jack Kirby, who is the artist that co-created the X-Men. Mm. When I was talking at the time, I didn't want to like go into that like complex back history of where... Like, and I'll say it right now, just real, why not for this guy?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Stan Lee... probably took a lot more credit because he was more vocal about creating all his characters. Like, he created Spider-Man, X-Men, the Hulk, Daredevil, Fantastic Four, like all these wonderful characters. But the reality is he co-created them with the artists. Mm-hmm. So he just like may have came up with like the name or like a very general idea, and then the artist had to like draw it.
Mm-hmm.
And the way a Marvel comic was drawn in the 60s was that actually the artist would draw the entire comic and all the action and like basically come up with the plot without words.
Wow.
And Stan Lee would just fill in the dialogue bubbles.
Hmm.
So but he did like he had input though too. So
right.
Yeah, so it was like it
a beautiful
I don't know.
Creative process really.
Yeah, but in a way the artist should get more credit than Stan like that's what people's
yeah,
argument
yeah,
is.
Yeah.
Like because the artist is like really creating the world and like making the look and like
right.
Well, when you say that they draw
It's called the Marvel Method, by the way.
Oh.
They draw they like do they discuss the story?
Yeah, so they do.
Though?
They have a brief discussion, or maybe he writes a paragraph. Stanley's like, okay, this is what kind of happens.
Like a treatment.
Yeah, treatment.
Yeah.
Like a brief one-page treatment. And then the artist goes off, like, creates the whole thing in depth, and then Stanley just writes the dialogue bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but then what happened was, and I think this is where the sticking points are, is that as they got, like, better at it and more successful, Stan probably wasn't even writing treatments. The artist was probably just, like, doing it all.
Mm-hmm.
And Stan just wrote the, like, the little dialogue bubbles. He wasn't, like, even saying, like, oh, this should happen next.
He's like, just leave me a bubble.
I don't even know. And that's very contentious, too. It's a very sensitive issue. So screw you guy who says, like, I don't know about this stuff. I know about it.
It creates itself to a certain point. When the process is, like, like working so well, it creates itself. People yes. are just...
All right, but that's a big aside. And then, so then, Cyclops and Jean show up. They join the fight with Cable. They're all trying to, like, everyone's confused because Mystique is Adler. Adler's Mystique. Cable's confused, too. Jean falls off a mountain, as she often does. And Rogue saves her.
Classic Jean.
I know. And so casually, that's what you were saying.
Yeah.
She's yeah. just like, oops.
And yeah. Well, I think about back to that X-Men video game.
Yeah. Right.
Her only purpose was to fly.
Right. The Sega Genesis game, if you fall off a mountain, Jean Grey flies in and rescues you.
That's right.
With her, like, mind-lifting powers. Yeah. But in this scenario, Rogue swoops in and saves Jean. And, like, Jean's, like... You know, like, eternally grateful, obviously. Like, you saved my life. What would I ever do without you?
Yeah.
Or no, Cyclops says that because he loves Jean. And he's like, I can never thank you.
No idea how much this means to me. Or
right.
Like that, again, yeah. And then she wells up with tears again.
And looks to the, like, the moon. And it's, like, so sad. It's like a real anime moment. It's really beautiful.
She's like,
And then at that point, Rogue helps Adler, who she doesn't know is Mystique, rebuild this complex machine that's since been destroyed. Like, somehow she puts it back together. And she explains to Adler that, listen, I need to be a mutant. I need to help people with my powers. So she gets a little bit more acceptance. And, yeah, it's you know, it's a lesson we've learned.
She's rebuilding the thing that could destroy her. Because that's Adler's thing.
Yeah, but she thinks that, like, she doesn't know it's for evil.
Or not destroy her, but I mean, like...
Right.
She's rebuilding the thing that she is now choosing to reject.
Yes. Well, she says it's not for me, but maybe for others. She understands.
Getting back to that individual...
Unlike Wolverine, who just thinks we're all together. Right. We're all on the same page, that we all love her powers.
But no one wants that shit machine.
Right. And speaking of which, she runs into our friend Angel again, who's in his, like, awesome red and white spandex outfit from, like, the 70s comics. he's got, like, a cool, like, Halo logo on his chest, and he's real jealous of Rogue because she can fly without wings.
Yeah.
And he's like, how do you fly without wings? And she says, I don't know, I just do. You're lucky. And then she's like, yeah, right, lucky. And he flies off.
And she flies off, but it was, like, a chance encounter that, like...
Yeah.
I also think about, like, in my memory of it, he's not, like, flapping his wings. He's just up there, sort of like sitting there.
Well, he flaps his wings.
He's flapping his wings.
But you're right. He's kind of like he's got a lot of power with those wings. It's they're pretty good wings.
They're good wings.
Yeah, right. He can like hover.
They have a little bit like nuclear power almost.
Yeah.
You know,
like what?
They're super
nuclear.
Efficient.
Nuclear. Yeah.
Like well, super efficient.
Nuclear.
All right. I mean, you're like spoiling the next episode because Angel goes. He,
no way.
Yeah, he wants Adler's treatment. So that's how the episode ends, on a cliffhanger where he's being zapped with this machine that's going to turn him into a slave of Apocalypse, which is going to alter him and his wings in a way that's, like, way more than he was ever expecting.
Is he going to become a bad guy forever?
Well, that's a good question. We can get in that to
is
the next episode.
Is anyone a bad guy forever? And what is a bad guy, really?
Apocalypse. And his final line.
Or Darkseid.
Another nice transition. Apocalypse's final line is completely badass. He says, I know more of this world than you have ever dreamed. That is why I must destroy it. And what do you guys think of that?
That's awesome.
He's not far off. I think everyone feels that
way. So do you think if you lived 5,000 years, like, you'd feel like you'd have to destroy the world?
Yes, I would.
Yeah.
If I lived 5,000 years, it's just, like, war after war after, like, oppression after oppression.
You'd be like, this shit has to end.
That's it. I'm so... I can't take any more of this.
So you agree with Apocalypse?
Well, I don't think
you... Robot friend.
You can't necessarily can or you can't. But the question is whether or not you, like, trust him or not. Because I feel like you don't really know
what
he knows and his opinion of it.
Mm.
You just want to know, like, is he, like, bad but so smart that maybe we're bad?
What?
Right. Like, he's operating on a whole other level of consciousness and, like, cosmic, like, psychedelic insanity. Like,
we have to fight, you know. But.
I mean, I guess bad for us because we get blown up.
Yeah,
but
we're
I
the
mean,
sheep.
Maybe we're poisonous to this earth.
Maybe we like being blown up. We don't know.
Well, that's what
Does
Apocalypse thinks.
Anyone here been blown up?
He thinks we're asking for it.
Maybe that's the point of X-Men.
Yeah.
What, to, like, make us, like...
Maybe death is cool.
On that note,
this is the suicide episode. Yeah. And drink your Kool-Aid.
It's really 50-50.
Yeah, let's talk about 13 Reasons Why. No, you guys know about this?
No, I don't know.
Let's not go there.
Let's not go there,
yeah,
though.
I'm
scared.
I just want to say, I think that about wraps it up here. I want to say, please find us on Facebook, the X-Men Task Podcast. Just search it out. It's a Facebook group. Join. We'll add you. You can ask us questions. We'll read them on the air. Follow me on Facebook at Willie Simpson. Subscribe to the podcast, rate us 5 stars, tell your friends. You can get the podcast wherever they can be found. And that's all I have to say. Let's go around the room. Sonia, do you have anything to say or add before we go? You good?
I'm good.
All right. Katie.
Powerful words. I want to piggyback on that. Better for silence.
All right. George?
I can't think of anything.
All right.
Covered it all.
I'm the only one who promotes my Twitter handle, and I'm rapidly approaching 100 followers.
Nice.
Just, what was that?
Yeah, yeah, give it out. Yeah.
It's at @KATY_IRWIN.
Yep, the best Twitter handle of them all.
I'll follow you if you follow me.
Katie_Irwin. Yeah, please, I will.
Sweet. You'll be lucky number 95. George, you on Twitter?
No.
Well, Cal Dodd is the voice of Wolverine, and he follows us.
And it won't find me.
So we love you, Cal. We love you, Wolverine. All right. Until next time, next episode, episode 10. I forget the name, so whatever. Just join us for episode 10. That's all I got. Good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.